The First Crusade really preached against Christians, heretics, which raged across southern France from 1208 to 1229. The other is to look at the Reconquista in Spain briefly, which now assumes the status of a crusade. And is a very, very successful theater and certainly draws not only the Spanish but many French and other Western Europeans into a theater of operations that proves a success. And then briefly also at the Northern Crusaders, a topic that I haven't discussed very much because it's pretty much peripheral to our subject, but the efforts to move in and convert the various Baltic-speaking peoples, these would be the so-called Old Prussians, that is the original residents of Prussia, not the German-speaking Prussians who eventually built the Prussian state in the 15th and 16th century that eventually went on to unite Germany, or to be more accurate, divided Germany, but that gets us to Bismarck. The peoples of Latvia, Lithuania, some of the Finns, the Estonians, all of these Baltic peoples who were still pagans, in some cases pagans as late as the 14th century, who were brought under the control of mostly German-speaking Christian princes, the Hanseatic League, and the Teutonic Order, a military monastic order that emerged in Levant but found its real existence, its real raison d'être in the conquest of the Baltic, because all three of these operations had a profound effect on redefining Crusader warfare. First, the Albigensian Crusade. Subject to a great deal of literature, it was the subject immediately of an epic poem written from the southern French, the Provençal viewpoint, which has come down to us, and it was preached by Innocent III in 1208. That is a remarkable shift in Innocent's position. If Innocent, and we're correct on this, was very much against the use of crusade for the reunification of the Orthodox Church with the Catholic Church, less than 4 years later, he is more than willing to preach a crusade against Christians, Cathars, they're called in the text, that is, heretical Christians who were designated Manichees, we'll get to who they are in a moment, in southern France, in a way he would not have thought several years later, earlier. And I think the impact of the Fourth Crusade really began to change opinions. Well, look, if you could do this, if you could take Constantinople, if you could wage a crusade that advanced Christian interests in general, without any reference to Jerusalem, why not wage a crusade against the enemies from within, the heretics? And this revives old Roman traditions where you, back in the 4th and 5th century, had Christian emperors who came down on heretics, who passed legislation. Now, these heretics in southern France have been subject to a great deal of study, and it's a very controversial subject. There's been several fine studies, the most recent by a man named Mark Pegg. And these studies have revealed that the so-called Cathars, who are thought of as dualist heretics, they believe in good and evil and eternal battle. They're related to these Manichees, who are mentioned in St. Augustine's writing. St. Augustine actually himself was a Manichee at one point. And the Manichees are really an independent religion, not a Christian heresy, but that's a whole other subject in itself. That these Cathars are largely a figment of the imagination and the writings of ecclesiastical writers of the late 12th century. Men who were learned in what is known as the writings of heresiologists. These are experts in heresy going back to the 4th century, they write compendiums on different heresies. With rising literate culture in the 12th century, I spoke about in the 12th century Renaissance, the rediscovery of the classical past, hostile prelates, theologians, whenever they saw activities which didn't look Catholic as they defined it, these were seen as heretical. And in southern France, there was deference paid to healers, to traditional holy ones, inspired ones. The language is quite clear on this. Many times it was nothing more than respect. These sort of acts of good manners, in some sense, or politeness, were seen as deference to people who must be leaders of a counter church, a heretical church. Their theology was questionable. And the writers of who isolate this heresy, the so-called Cathars in the 1170s and 1180s, can only believe that behind these acts of homage to non-traditional ecclesiastical figures, you know, religious figures, healers, local holy people, ones who perform miracles or seen as somehow inspired, this can only mean that there's some sort of subversive church behind it. And they were called the Cathars, Manichees, and various others. And already, by 1179, they're being condemned as a heretical group. Innocent III is extremely concerned about this, and he tells the reigning Count of Toulouse in southern France, Raymond VI, a descendant of the Crusader Lord, who went out there on the First Crusade, to put down the heresy. Now, if the current analysis is right, there really weren't any heretics to put down, and you could explain why Raymond is very perplexed. Like, what are you talking about? Who's a heretic? I mean, he can go to his counts and tell them there really shouldn't be any heresy, and there is no counter-church as far as we can tell. Many of his vassals were perplexed by it. Raymond really doesn't have anything to do, and he's not really in a position to do much. And in the exchange of envoys, you know, some papal legates get killed, and this is just seized upon as an excuse to preach a crusade. It's launched in 1208 to put down the heresy in southern France. This becomes the longest crusade on record.